Well, good morning. Yeah, this week we're looking at Slow Down Spirituality, Part 2. And in that kind of context, there was a wife and she went to visit her husband who had been in jail for a fair while. And she had a good visit, and then as she was leaving, she went and said to the prison officer, she said, look, I'm really upset. Like, you shouldn't make my husband work so hard. And the prison officer said, he laughed and said, you're kidding me, aren't you? He said, all he does is eat, sleep all day and stay in his cell. I don't know what you're talking about. She said, well, no, that's not what he tells me. He tells me he's been digging a tunnel for 3 months. Last week, just a quick recap, we looked at Sabbath. And if you missed that, you can catch all our sermons on our website in audio, or you can watch the whole church service off Facebook if you want to go back and watch it. But we talked about Sabbath, which means Shabbat, which means stop. Remember, when you come to a stop sign at the road and it's a solid line, the law says you need to fully stop. Your wheels need to stop turning and you need to stop as close as you can to that line and not go over it. If your wheels keep turning and you're doing a driving test, you fail. So I'm not sure how you come to stop signs, whether you treat them like a giveaway sign or not, but I talked about that last week, that the whole idea of Sabbath is stop. Stop. Just stop. There's this DNA and a rhythm that God has built into creation that we work six and rest one, that there's this rhythm of work and rest, and we can't just keep working, working, working. And even when we take days off, we still work and do errands and we're still so tired on our days off because we don't stop. We just keep going and we fill our time with all more social activities or more other things, and we just keep rolling through the stop signs, and that's very, very dangerous. A quote from last week I want to remind us of, from Dan Allender, says, the Sabbath is an invitation to enter delight. And that's the whole thing about Sabbath. It's about delight. He says, the Sabbath, when experienced as God intended, is the best day of our lives. Without question or thought, it's the best day of the week. Sabbath is the holy time when we feast, play, dance, sing, pray, laugh, tell stories, read, paint, walk, watch creation in all its fullness. I think we asked last week, what could I do for 24 hours that would sit in awe and wonder and thankfulness of God in my life? That's the idea of Sabbath. And I want to highlight again two books that we've been using through this series, Healthy Emotionally Discipleship by Peter Scazzaro and John Mark Comer's book, The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry. If you get a chance to have a look at those books or read those books, they will serve you well. In the midst of that, we're doing this series about being and bearing the image of Christ. And I want to remind us, we have to be before we bear. We have to be before we bear. It's not that bearing we don't bear or we don't do. We do do, because God has prepared in advance for us good works to do. But they have to come after our being. Like the new commandment says, a new commandment I give to you, love others as you have first loved me. You have to be in love relationship with our Father and sit in the being of that relationship. Before then, we understand what that love is like and how we can love other people. Otherwise, we'll go off loving other people in ways that are not godly, because we haven't sat first in the image of God and His love for us and understood what that unconditional, totally accepting love is like. I want to encourage us to think about, don't let your doing for God take you where your being with God has not been. Don't let your doing for God take you where your being with God has not been. Good thought to think about. So this morning I want to talk about Slow Down Spirituality Part 2, and I want to hone in on two things, silence and stillness. Talk about them in relation to what God might want to say to us about that and how they are tools for us to develop. Scazzaro says this. He says, if we're going to do for God out of our being with God, we must practice silence and stillness in order to nurture our relationship with him. In fact, without the practice of intentional silence before the Lord, it's impossible to mature into spiritual adulthood with a doing for God that is sustained by a being with God. Why? Because we're so full of distractions, worries, and plans that our inner world is jam-packed, allowing limited room for God to fill us. That's a pretty deep kind of quote right there, a very sobering thought when we think about relationship with God. Because our world is full of noise and full of distractions. I'm amazed, like, and I'm not immune to it either. I'm not squeaky clean of some of the things I'm about to share either. And I have to keep reminding myself about them. But I'm amazed how often, if we have a spare minute, we just turn to our phones, quickly check our Insta account, Twitter, or our Facebook, quickly what's on there, or quickly scan a photo and put it on and post it. We turn on the TV. We have to leave the TV on at night when we go out and our dog's alone at home now. Because during COVID, like, he had issues of everyone being out. And he has to have some noise in the house to feel okay to settle and just sleep on the lounge. But there's a lot of us that are not too different from that either. We have to have noise on even though we're not watching the TV. It just feels comforting to have that on in the room. Some of us need even music or noise to go to sleep. We have the earphones on or the iPods in or the earpods in when we catch the bus or train. And I'm just amazed how many people I scare when I'm out running. Not because I'm coming towards them, but because I come up behind them and they've got music in their ears and they can't hear me. And then all of a sudden I'm right next to them. What? Or how many times I'm riding my bike and I almost run over someone because they just don't hear me coming. And I'm ringing my bell, bang, 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 bang. And they're just on their phone, just jaywalking basically. And almost, I have almost hit some people. The whole idea that even now on the train, we need quiet carriages. So you can get away from the noise. We need to have music on. We need to walk, or when we go and walk somewhere, we have our earpods in. There's just that thing where we've lost the art of being still, or lost the art of being silent and still. Scazzaro finishes that kind of section I read to you before with this. He says, "Let me say this as clearly as possible. Integrating silence and stillness utterly transforms the way we follow Jesus and the way we lead." Integrating silence and stillness utterly transforms the way we follow Jesus and the way we lead. If Scazzaro is right, and I believe he is, and I believe the scriptures give testimony to that, I'm not sure what your desire is, but my desire certainly is to have my life transformed in the way I follow Jesus and lead. We'd probably do well to think about what God has to say to us about being still and being silent and why he says that to us. So Scazzaro gives four reasons why integrating silence and stillness utterly transforms the way we follow Jesus. And I just want to quickly highlight those before then I have a look at some of what the Bible has to say more specifically about that. The first thing he says, in silence we let go. We surrender our will to God's will. So Jesus, in the Garden of Gethsemane, Luke 22:42, he prays, "Father, if you're willing, please take this cup of suffering from me." And then he says, "Yet I want your will to be done, not mine." That sense when we stop, we not only give way, but we see what else is coming and we have a choice about whether we go or not. When we come and we're still before God, we actually can hear God speak to us. We actually can stop a moment and allow his will to invade our life. Kind of like what we were just singing a minute ago about, you know, Peter getting out of the boat and walking on water, that moment where he took his eyes off Jesus, like, that sense about not my will, your will, that will I keep looking, will I keep trusting, and how do I find that? It comes from stillness or silence, more to the point. And second thing he says, in silence we let go of our agendas, allowing communion with God to become the core of our lives. And so we shift our focus from spending time alone with God to making all of our requests to him and before him, to sitting with God just to be with him, where that's what I was talking about before in the new command, we have the opportunity to receive his love. One of my favorite lines from The Princess Diaries that I used to kind of quote to my girls sometimes is, what I'm hearing is this, what I want to hear is this. It's no reflection on them. But it's kind of like that, you know, sometimes we come to God and I wonder whether he's thinking, what I'm hearing, Rob, is this, what I want to hear is this. Just stop and listen and be with me. Stop talking to me. Stop asking me for everything. Just let me invade your world and enjoy my presence. Because out of that will come what you actually need. If you just shut up long enough to realize that. I'm speaking to myself when I say that. Psalm 46:10 says, be still and know that I am God. One of my favorite verses, be still and know that I am God. The third reason Skisara says is in silence we let go, allowing God to deeply transform us. It's that idea of Romans 12:2. Don't copy the behavior and customs of this world, but let God transform you into a new person by changing the way you think. Then you'll learn to know God's will for you, which is good, pleasing, and perfect. It's kind of like, I love that beer ad where, you know, kind of like the guy stops drinking beer, or he says, I don't like beer. And then everyone stops all of a sudden. Well, why are you drinking it? Because everyone else drinks it. And then all of a sudden everyone says, well, I don't like beer either. And I sometimes wonder, I wonder what it'd be like if we kind of had this counterculture movement to say, why aren't you on your phone now? You know, I don't like going on Insta every second I have. Why not? Well, because everyone else is doing it. What if we actually just kept our phones in our pockets or left them at home or didn't invade that space and just enjoyed being in the queue or just enjoyed being in traffic and actually just enjoyed maybe putting on worship and just the presence of God or just communicating with? What if we started a countercultural movement that actually awakens something in other spirits, particularly in church? It's about listening to God's voice above the voices of this world. It's about the deep inner transforming work of God's voice. Again, one of my favorite verses in Isaiah chapter 40 and verse 31. Those who wait upon God get fresh strength. They spread their wings and soar like eagles. They run and don't get tired. They walk and don't lag behind. The reverse is often true of us. We run and get tired and we walk and we lag behind and we wonder why. Well, here's what God says about that. Those that wait, those that are silent, those that are still before God, get strength. They renew themselves. They become transformed. And then the last reason Skisara says, in silence we let go. Notice that in each of the phrases that he gives, in silence we let go. We let go of something when we sit in silence. We open ourselves to hear God speak. John 10:27 says, my sheep listen to my voice, and I know them, and they follow me. In James 1:19, he says, understand this, my brothers and sisters, you must all be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to get angry. And the writer of Ecclesiastes says, as you enter the house of God, keep your ears open and your mouth shut. It is evil to make mindless offerings to God. Don't make rash promises and don't be hasty in bringing matters before God. After all, God is in heaven and you are here on earth, so let your words be few. And finally, Matthew 11:15. Anyone with ears to hear should listen and understand. Anyone with ears to hear and listen should understand. That phrase occurs about 54 times in the Gospels. 54. If we have ears to listen, we should hear. Hear what? Hear God's voice speaking to us. I don't care whether you need music on to study or the TV on to study or or music in the background to drive, or whatever the time is you need noise and distraction. But the bottom line is, it's really, really hard to hear someone else speaking when there's other music or other noise happening. There's kind of listening, and then there's listening. Skisara says, again, if we stay with silence, be it for 2 minutes, 5 minutes, 20 minutes or more each day, it revolutionizes our relationship with God in Christ. Would you have 2 minutes a day to revolutionize your relationship with Jesus Christ? Or do you want your relationship with Jesus Christ to be revolutionized? Interesting thought. Maybe 30 days, good opportunity. Try it out. Take 2 minutes a day, sit in silence, and just say, God, I'm here for you. See what happens. Come back and tell me. 30 days. Just an idea. John Mark Comer says, the new normal of hurried digital distraction is robbing us of the ability to be present. Present to God. Present to other people, present to all that is good, beautiful, and true in our world, even present to our own souls. The noise of modern world makes us deaf to the voice of God, drowning out the one input we need most. And again, is there a practice of Jesus that would help us overcome that noise and distraction? And I want to say to you, yes. It's called eremos. It's the Greek word for wilderness, a quiet place. I don't know about you, but when I grew up, it was kind of like this idea that you had to have a quiet time. And the idea was that you had to have a quiet time, and you had to have a quiet time every day. It was kind of like, not did you have a quiet time, but did you have seven quiet times this week? Could you, you know, they used to give you these little kind of daily devotional notes, I think scripture unit and some other things, and just have to tick the box, yep. And it was annoying to me because I'm a person of structure if I had six days and one that didn't have a tick to it. So some days I'd do two quiet times so I could tick the box legitimately to say I've done seven. So I didn't like any blanks. And whilst that was good, it didn't really cultivate that sense of relationship with Jesus in a quiet space. What it cultivated was my doing before being. It's still a good thing, but it came from the wrong place. And so I want to talk this morning about the quiet place and the idea of what the quiet place is and how the quiet place can actually revolutionize our life if we dare to find the quiet place. I want to take you back to Matthew chapter 3 and just set a context for you. In Matthew chapter 3, Jesus is baptized by John the Baptist. And what's happening there is John the Baptist has already seen Jesus a couple of days, and he pointed out, hey, there's the Lamb of God. This is the one I was talking to you about that will come after me. And then he comes, John is baptizing some people down the River Jordan, and Jesus comes along, and Jesus says, you're going to baptize me today. And so John baptizes Jesus, and then the heavens open, and a dove came down. He sits on his shoulder. There's a voice from heaven and says, this is my beloved Son with whom I'm well pleased. That's chapter 3. Then in chapter 4, it says, verse 1, then Jesus was led by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil. Have you ever kind of just read that and go, oh, that's awkward and uncomfortable. It doesn't really make sense. Why would the Spirit lead Jesus into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil? Why would he kind of, it almost seems like I'm going to set you up here with something that's not so good. Has anybody else kind of read that and struggled with that passage, or you just kind of like, oh, I don't quite understand that. Let's just move on. Most people, I think, would read going into the wilderness as Jesus going into a place of weakness. But what if the wilderness was not a place of weakness? What if the Holy Spirit was actually leading Jesus into a place of strength? And actually not setting him up for attack, but actually setting him up for victory. The Greek word for wilderness is eremos. Eremos has a range of meanings. It can mean desert, deserted place, desolate place, solitary place, lonely place, quiet place, or wilderness. And it was Jesus who went from being baptized to then spending 40 days praying and fasting in the eremos. I'll call it a quiet place in this context. So here, the sense that it could be a place of weakness, what does Jesus do? The Spirit leads Jesus to a place without distraction, without the noise of the world around him, to a quiet place where he can commune with the Father and sit in his love and hear the Father speak to him and hear clarity with the Father. So by the time the enemy comes along and knocks at his door and says, hey, you can eat this bread or jump from here or do this, Jesus has such clarity and such confidence in who he is and who the Father is and what he's about that he can just says, rack off, rack off, rack off. And if you see Jesus come out at the end of that passage where Jesus comes out, he goes in with the Spirit upon him and he goes out with this full, it says, full of the Holy Spirit. It was a transforming experience for him to be in the wilderness. It was actually a place of great strength. And so what if we stop thinking about the wilderness or the quiet place as a place of weakness or a place in terms of that sometimes we're too afraid to step into quietness because of what it may reveal or too afraid to stop because we don't have time or too afraid to slow down because maybe we're even scared of what God may say to us. We're not prepared to confront the honest reality or feedback that God may want to say to us about, hey, that, let's work on that. The quiet place. Jesus was in the desert hearing God's voice without distraction or distortion. Let's look at some other practices of Jesus with the eremos in the Gospels. In Mark chapter 1, verse 35, it says this, before daybreak the next morning, Jesus got up and went out to the isolated place. Again, the word there is eremos, to pray. If you have a look at Mark chapter 1 and the context of Mark 1, it is a jam-packed chapter of full of ministry and activity. Have a read of it maybe today or in the next few days because it's got all this stuff that Jesus is the activity of the Messiah. It's kind of like the first day of Jesus on the job of being Messiah. That's Mark chapter 1. And here's Jesus in verse 29-34. It says, Jesus left the synagogue. He went to Simon and Andrew's home. Simon's mother-in-law, she was sick with a high fever. Jesus healed her. That's kind of the first thing that kind of happened. And that opened the door then to word getting around the whole town. And then in verses 32-34, it says, that evening after sunset, so what, I don't know what sunset was that day. Not sure they had daylight saving back then. So let's say maybe 6 o'clock. Okay. So from 6 o'clock onward, that evening after sunset, many sick and demon-possessed people were brought to Jesus. The whole town gathered at the door to watch. That's quite a crowd. So Jesus healed many people who were sick with various diseases, and he cast out many demons, but because the demons knew who he was, he did not allow them to speak. Before daybreak the next morning, that's the next morning after that night. So that's that day, he heals the mother-in-law. Then after six, the whole town comes. He heals all these people. He casts out demons. Who knows what time he went to bed after he ministered to all those people. And then verse 35, before daybreak. So let's say before 6 a.m. Jesus got up and he went out to eremos to pray. He didn't say, I'm tired. A big day yesterday. I need to sleep in. I need coffee and breakfast. He got up before daybreak and he went out to pray. Let's put this in a bigger context. Jesus just spent 40 days in the wilderness being fasting and praying in Eremos and then tempted by the devil. He comes out of the wilderness and his first day on the job is that day in Capernaum with all those people. And the very next morning he goes back into the wilderness or back into Eremos, the quiet place, to pray. That ought to give us insight into the rhythm that Jesus creates here with the quiet place. So at the time that Jesus' life is the busiest is the time he withdraws to the quiet place. In other words, the busier we are, the more we need the quiet place. Not the other way around. The busier we are, I don't have time. Tomorrow maybe. Next week maybe. Interesting. Let's have a look at another one. Mark chapter 6, verse 30 to 32. The apostles, this time they'd been sent out to do ministry. The apostles returned to Jesus from their ministry tour and they told him all that they'd done and taught. Then Jesus says to him, after they're given their ministry reports, like about what they'd done and healings and testimonies and all that, Jesus said, let's go off by ourselves to a quiet place. The word there for quiet place is Eremos. And rest a while. He said this because there were so many people coming and going that Jesus and his apostles didn't even have time to eat. So they left the boat for a quiet place, Eremos, where they could be alone. Isn't that our world today? There's so many people coming and going. And you go to a restaurant and it's so noisy. Jesus says, hey, let's go away. Let's get away from this for a minute and have a quiet place where we can just rest a while. Because those that wait on the Lord will renew their strength. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not be faint. Psalm 46:10, be still and know that I am God. In Luke's gospel, Jesus goes to his quiet place, his Eremos, no less than 9 times. It tells me that it's a pretty important part of Jesus' walk. And so if we're going to follow Jesus, it ought to be a pretty important part of our discipleship process to find those places of regularly going to our Eremos. And finally, in Luke chapter 5, 15 to 16, but despite Jesus' instructions, the report of his power spread even faster and vast crowds came to hear him and preach and hear him preach and to be healed of their diseases. But Jesus often withdrew to the wilderness or often withdrew to his Eremos for prayer. He often withdrew his Eremos to prayer. For me, that just reinforces the idea that the Eremos is actually a place of strengthening. It's actually a place for us to enter regularly, not a place to avoid. The fuller Jesus' life and ministry got, the more people pressed in, the more demands and expectations, the more he withdrew. And let's be clear, he didn't just have a day off. He intentionally created a quiet place, stopping, slowing down, stillness, listening, resting, strengthening. Even 2 minutes a day. Start there. In silence, we let go, surrendering our will to God's will. In silence, we let go of our agendas, allowing communion with God to become the core of our lives. In silence, we let go, allowing God to deeply transform us. In silence, we let go, opening ourselves to hear God speak. Jesus gave us a practice to follow, a practice to escape the noise and distraction, the cultural expectations, the demands of other people, and a place to find strength. It's called going to our quiet place, our Eremos, our place of regaining strength. So how do we do that? What may be some practical steps for us just to take, some baby steps just to move forward if that's an area of struggle for us? Well, I just would encourage us to start with integrating and practicing silence every day. Turn off the TV. Turn off the music. Intentionally sit somewhere for 1 minute even and just say, God, I'm here with you. I'm here for you. Let's enjoy being together. Can I encourage you to incorporate a regular quiet time, a regular eremos in your day, in your week, in your month, even in your year? I try to have a time each day where I'm just quiet and still give time to God, to being with God. Once a week, I like to get away for a couple of hours and just go retreat by the ocean and just sit. And I'll often just ask God, what do you want to say to me today? And I'll just journal my thoughts that come. Some of those journals entries, as I've kind of been spending a bit of time more lately going back and reading them, profound, what I've written in the moment and haven't thought much about and gone back to a little bit later and go, wow, I didn't realize God was saying that to me there. And that's really hitting home now as I'm going through something that he's been speaking to me already about. Once a year, I try and get away for a whole week. I book a little cabin in the Hunter Valley and I go up Monday and I come back Friday, and the whole purpose of the week is just eremos. Just enjoying the presence of God. I'll drink wine, I'll eat chocolate, I'll sit by an open fire, I'll look out at the vineyards, I'll just journal, I'll read, I'll worship, I'll sit, I'll listen, I'll walk, I'll run. Just all the stuff that's part of Sabbath and delight. And just creating space for God to speak and God to invade my world. So as a rhythm kind of daily, weekly, yearly, I used to take half days or days once a month, but because I do try and do a couple of hours once a week, I don't do that as much now. But in Bathurst, when we were there, I used to go to a mate's property and I had a trig point on the top of a hill there where I could see 360 degrees around. And I'd go out there one afternoon a week and just sit on the high place, eremos. Just walk up, sit, pray, shout, scream, sit, still, listen. It was my time, just eremos with God. The third thing I say is when you do that, my encouragement is just take time to slow down. Just take time to breathe. Think about when we slow down and we start to breathe, we start to feel. So let me just give you a warning that sometimes when we start to do that, we'll start to get in touch with feelings and things that have been maybe sitting and simmering there for a while. Maybe some feelings of grief or loss. Maybe some feelings of anger or pain. Or some feelings of loneliness or frustration or bitterness or resentment. And the thing is that when we stop, similar to like when we just keep running, and then we stop and we get sick, that's because you've been running on adrenaline and all of a sudden you stop and your immune system actually is not running on adrenaline anymore and you get sick. That's why when you have holidays, you often get sick because you stop. You've been running too much. You've been running too hard for too long. Same with our emotional capacity. We just keep running. When we stop and actually give time for that, we'll begin to notice there may be some things under the surface that we need to pay attention to and process. And that's all good and it's actually healthy, but it can be painful to actually have to process that. So just be aware of that. Get help if that's the case. It's necessary for us to do that. That's how we become whole. That's how we become part of who we are. Jesus in the garden, he stops and he says, Jesus, I really don't want this suffering. He got in touch with what he was feeling and he was able to declare that to his Father. And the last thing is John 15 talks about learning to abide in Jesus. That's the core of discipleship right there. Sit with that passage if you have a quandary about what to read in the next little while and understand what it means to abide with Jesus, just being with him. Start small and grow big.